The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Doing all well, I trust, or well enough, I hope, at least. Thanks for coming back to join us here on Spin the Rally Pod, where we're a bit late with our review of the Acropolis Rally of the Gods. Sorry about that. It's been a bit of a busy week all round. We have got the team standing by, though. Voice of Rally, dirtfish.com contributor, and really poor postman, Colin Clark. Where are my T-shirts? Former motorsport team boss, George Donaldson. And the man of many words, Dirtfish senior staff writer, David Evans. And I am the rally fan, Lisa O'Sullivan. And I've got a cold. I haven't had a cold for 2 years. And I think my niece has given it to me. Anyway, this is not talking about the Acropolis Rally of Greece, which, I have to say, it's like it's never been away. What a hit.
What a hit. What a hit. It was great to be back. I have to say... If I have one criticism, am I allowed to make one criticism to start with?
No.
Sort of make a comment, Colin.
Can I make a comment? It's an observation, George. You're quite right, because you can't criticise, because it was a fantastic week, and you're from the testing right through to the long recce and then the long rally. It was a tremendous challenge. I don't know. I wanted to see a little more of what we kind of traditionally think of as Acropolis stages, the stages around the northern Peloponnese, around Loutrakia. I thought 2 days in the mountains it wasn't their fault, but what turned into kind of wet, muddy, clay-like stages wasn't particularly Greek for me. It was still challenging, but it wasn't particularly Greek. I'd like to see 2 days around the dusty, hard, bedrocky-type stages, and maybe a day up in the mountains. I don't know. That would be my only observation. You're right, George, not a criticism. Because other than that, I thought it was great. I really, really enjoyed it. It was a fantastic rally. On the face of it, appeared well organised, and we got some great competition.
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed by the lack of mobility at the front. Really, there wasn't a huge amount of action. But what a great spectacle! It was good. It was good viewing, and there was less drama than I would have liked, but that's not down to the rally. That was just down to circumstance.
That was a surprise, George.
The excellence of some drivers and the championship positions. You know, obviously, Ogier wasn't pushing to the absolute max. Pretty quick, but not to the absolute max. And then just drivers not having the best event. Some of them and others having wee difficulties, but digging deep to keep championship hopes alive, perhaps. I don't know.
But there was drama, wasn't there? I mean, it's quite rare to see issues with Toyotas. And we saw that really early on with Elvin. And then also saw another desperately difficult event for Hyundai.
Yeah. Yeah, do you know what? And I think those early dramas kind of dictated certainly the way that Ogier's rally went, didn't they? Because Ogier did what he always does from first on the road on gravel rallies and gives it 110% on the Friday, just to put himself, hopefully in a position where he can challenge. Now, what he found at the end of Friday was that he was very much in a position to challenge. There was, 3.8 seconds between him and Robin Perra in the lead, and we had Tanak in between them. It was incredible. And after such a hard day, a long day's rallying, to have 3.8 between them. But Ogier then reassessed. He'd done the hard work, put himself in a position to push for the win, but then quite clearly, being the most intelligent of world champions, thought, no, there's no point. There's no point in me pushing like crazy through today and tomorrow because my two nearest challengers are out. As you say, problems for Elvin, problems for Thierry. And he did the intelligent thing, and he showed absolute championship-winning intelligence yet again. He can put aside the opportunity to win, David, and concentrate on the bigger picture.
Sébastien Ogier, as you say, Col, is the most intelligent man in the world, but you'd have to be pretty thick to be pushing for a win when your nearest rival was.
It's not thickness, David. It's not thickness.
At the end of Friday,
there are some drivers who are incapable of putting aside the desire.
Yeah, but at the end of Friday, I'm, I'm just looking now, and at the end of Friday, I'm still scrolling down.
Oh, they're outside the top 10, both of them. Outside the top 10.
Miles away. You know, yeah. Ogier has done, like you say, exactly what he said he'd do. And the thing is, you know, he doesn't like it. It's this kind of winning ugly thing. It doesn't sit easily with him at all, does it? It doesn't sit easily with any of them. But, you know, he's just doing exactly what he has to do. And I was, has anybody done the maths yet?
Oh,
can he?
Yes, I've seen it.
Can he be champion?
Yes, he can.
He can be champion next time.
He can be champion in Finland next week.
In Finland, yeah.
Requires, again, a set of circumstances. But, you know, as we've seen, particularly with Hyundai, and particularly with Hyundai in Finland, you know, Hyundai in Finland is not a happy story, is it? So there's a chance there with the Hyundai. You'd have to say less so with the Toyotas and with Elvin. And with Cali.
No, I mean, it's totally different event, but Hyundai in Finland didn't go too badly in February, did it? I know there's a bit of snow around, and we were a wee bit further north. But Tanak on Arctic Rally, you know, on fast roads. George, one question before we carry on about Greece. I was talking to somebody yesterday about how much testing they'd done on fast gravel. And they said, oh, you know, not a lot, but I've done a reasonable bit on sort of fast snow, sort of Swedish pre-event testing, that sort of thing. How similar would a car be set up from, say, Arctic Rally Finland to what we've got next week?
I wouldn't really be qualified to make terribly much of a comment on that.
Seriously,
Bound to bring across a fair amount of the general dynamics of the car. You know, you've got your core car, and all you're changing is really the setup. You'd bring a fair bit of it across, I could imagine, but the detail, the finesse that the drivers like. I think you'd be missing that. So you're probably going with some extent to, you know, just a judgment call on it.
I've heard you say this before, David, and I've always been sceptical about, you know, the similarities between, say, Arctic Rally Finland and Rally Finland. You know, the biggest difference was the lack of topography, if you like. You know, there were no real jumps. There were one or two jumps in Arctic Rally Finland. True. You know, you've got to get these cars set up to jump at maximum speed from corner to corner. And it is different. And the cars perform differently. And yes, the Hyundai worked exceptionally well in the snow. I don't think there is. It's a stretch. It's a real stretch to say because it worked well there, it's going to work well on the gravel around Jyväskylä. I think they'll struggle again. They have traditionally struggled. And okay, we've seen them quicker.
We've
seen them quicker in Estonia. But again, it's a different rally. The jumps are artificial jumps. You know, they don't have that natural sort of contour and that flowing corner to corner jumping and then not the jumping, but the maximum suspension into the next corner. And that requires a car that is beautifully poised and balanced and is 100% doing what the driver wants it to do.
But they're not going into it without an idea of what the event's going to bring. They've got settings for the car
already.
But
we look back throughout, you know, the history of the Hyundai World Rally team since 2000 and whatever it was, 13, 14, they brought the car, 14, and they have never performed on Rally Finland. And sometimes it's been completely perplexing. First stage, Thierry Neuville, about 3 or 4 years ago, lost, completely lost. How can this car be this bad on these roads? And it went from bad to worse that year. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that they've resolved those issues, because it would seem criminal if they couldn't resolve them. But I'm not confident.
But they can't. How can they, Cole? You know, I'll put my Hyundai flag away. Stop waving now. But how can they?
I agree.
You know, and all effort is now geared towards the 22 car. Yeah. They've got no more jokers. Yeah. They're with the SAC suspension that they've got. That ain't going to change. Yeah. So, you know, how can they?
I agree.
Like George said, you know, they can finesse the car with setup and stuff, but, you know, I'm sure they would have done that. The thing that you would say here is that we've got Oit Tanak in a Hyundai in Jyväskylä for the first time. He will make a difference. He will make a difference. You know, he goes down the back of a win last time out, doesn't he? Won in 19 in Toyota, and actually won in 18 as well. So actually is going there on a hat trick. He's a guy who can make the difference.
Yeah, I'm going to say something though, David. Tanak's in a dark place. Now, I know it's a difficult thing.
Well, I thought that, Cole, but then did you not see those pictures on social of him testing yesterday?
Yeah, testing is testing. Pictures are pictures.
The smiliest picture I've ever seen of Mr. Oit Tänak. Yeah. I looked at him and thought, crikey, what a handsome fella when he's smiling.
He's a lovely fella. We know that. We've had some lovely evenings with him. And he is one of those that has a competitive persona, and he's got his normal persona. And the two are, as you have to be a world champion, the two are completely separate. But no, I think, let's go back to Greece. You know, dearie me. Tänak, I thought he drove brilliantly, and I thought he absolutely put it all on the line. And the fact that he was there or thereabouts was remarkable. But to go out on a morning where you've got four soft tires on your car, it is wet, it is muddy, it is slippery. Your nearest rival, okay, is a little bit up the road from you, but he's got two hard compound tires on his car. You've got to say, under normal circumstances, Tänak would have eaten him for breakfast. He'd have eaten him for breakfast, with that advantage. And he just, yet again, wasn't able to find confidence to be able to push that car to the limit. He actually used the word scared. The car scared me a few times. He's not happy. He's not happy. He has, and he gave up on the season, I think, many months ago. But he just sees the year, the rallies, the championships, the years just going by and nothing changing. And it's desperate.
No, I think, and then he got to the end, of course, didn't he? He got through the final stage, and then the car before the stage wouldn't start. And then they switched it off in service, and it wouldn't start at all after that. So, I mean, all of that is psychologically in his mind that he was incredibly lucky.
Hammering him, David. Hammering him. Yeah. And he is the toughest of characters. He's mentally exceptionally strong. But when you see it,
but it's got to get to you after two years.
But you see it, and when you see it affecting him, you think, just how bad is it? Thierry Neuville, who is the ultimate team player, never says a word against Hyundai because he knows where he's made his money over the past 7 years. He knows, and he's a corporate kid.
That's maybe a little bit unfair on Thierry. I think, he also understands team morale.
I know the whole thing.
That's something that Tänak perhaps doesn't quite get in the same
I agree with you. That was unfair. It's not all to do with the money. But what I'm saying, he is the ultimate corporate player. He will not criticize ever. And he is fantastic. He will never, ever not offer a comment. He always gives a comment, always gives an analysis. But
till he sees you in Greece.
He sees me in Greece and then runs. but we had a situation on Friday night where he was vocal and he was quite outspoken and he was angry. And as you know, David, what did I do? Immediately sent that interview off to you guys going, guys, I've got this great interview.
And what happened, Cole?
Yeah, the recording.
Might have pressed the wrong button.
The recording didn't work.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
A little bit disappointing, at least. That was a bit of a low point.
It was a terrible...
As he talked us through how Thierry was nearly on his knees and in tears. Yes. And fortunately, Colin had got it all recorded. Oh, no, he had.
Dear. But anyway, it was most unusual.
How many years
then,
have I told you to check, double check and check again?
Oh, we did. It was a very strange occurrence, this one. A really, really strange occurrence. thanks, Lise.
But it's a fair point, though, Colt. He was, as you said, he was a man on the edge. But when you've had stuff like, that safari win snatched away, it takes an absolute saint not to be riled by these kind of things. And when they're coming in quite hot into the media zone, he said exactly what he said.
Well, we did get it, as you well know. We did get it on a second camera, just like two words of it. But what was interesting is it wasn't, as you said, David, hot into a media zone. He didn't say it at the end of a stage, full of anger, full of frustration, full of disappointment. He'd had a fair drive back to service. And he thought about what he was going to say, and he deliberately said it. But George, here's the interesting thing. We know he had problems with power steering, and that may or may not have been caused by him hitting something. I suspect it was, something's broken, because it was the Friday where we were in the really rough stages around Lamia. But what he referenced was an electrical issue that had hampered him, and he had once again shown its face as he came out of Athens that morning. And he said, this is now four rallies where the same problem is giving me issues. Now, I remember, George, coming to see you in your Pro Drive days and saying, look, we accept that problems happen and we fix them. What we don't accept is if problems happen twice and they haven't been fixed properly. I remember you saying something along those lines to me. But for it to happen four rallies running, you know, that was where the frustration came from. It was like, there are problems happening here that just are not being addressed or are not being resolved. And that must be difficult for a driver, George.
Very difficult indeed, Colin. So, I mean, you know, without going into the technicalities of it, it could be something slightly different happening every time. And intrinsically, perhaps that the electrical system on that car is you know, maybe it's been made by a different supplier. Maybe the loom has been created by a different supplier who's made, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of connections in those. Maybe he's not quite got something right, and it when it's tested, it's perfect. In rally use, when you start to get vibrations, even as you said right from the start, it's faulted. So, you know, have they not managed to identify what the issue is? You know, has it continued to elude them? Seems very, very unlikely, at which point you then have to start to throw new things at it, or revised manufacture at things. You need to grasp that nettle. It's pretty shocking that they haven't. I mean, it could be a budget issue, you know, that they've said, well, no, look, we reckon we've got it now, and we're not going to throw, literally, it would be hundreds of thousands of euros to potentially rewire that car. We're not talking about homologating a new loom or anything. We're just talking about getting new looms made. It would be tricky.
But here's the other thing,
you know,
George.
Is it something as simple as that, or is it an ECU problem? Seems unlikely. Sensors seems quite likely. You can change the sensors. You know, there's cheap sensors and there's expensive sensors. If somebody's bought cheap sensors, you know, if the purchase department, you know, here it is. The engineer specifies a particular set of sensors for the engine. Let's just for the sake of purchasing,
supplies it cheaper.
And purchasing says, oh, you know, you wanted those really nice Bosch such and such sensors, and they're €95 each. I managed to get them for €23 each on eBay, and they're still in a Bosch box, but they're not Bosch. You know, I mean, I saw a whole Dakar team had done months and months of testing. Subaru team in the first year it went to Argentina, and they redid all their cars, redid all their drive shafts and everything, using exactly the same supplied by GK Universal Joints. So all the UJs in the drive shafts were that, and they all failed and caught fire on the first day, and on the second day they had to retire. And what that was they'd bought them from the GKN dealer, in the same ones that they tested faultlessly for thousands and thousands of kilometers, and turned out they were copies, and they fell apart. Of course,
let's not forget this is the same team that has struggled with the car stalling in hairpins.
I was going to say that, David. Yeah, how long? How can that be? I mean, that's got to be a year since we first had that problem.
Yeah.
At least a year. And Tanak mentioned it again in Greece, didn't he? You know, stalled in a hairpin, lost time again. And that's unsettling. Well, you know, okay, you're talking handfuls of seconds, but when the top three cars finish on day one within 3.8 seconds of each other, handfuls of seconds clearly do count, but maybe more than that. It's unsettling, isn't it, for a driver? You know, it's unsettling.
It is.
Not knowing as you're coming down high speed, braking hard into a tight hairpin, what's this car going to do? Is it going to stop?
Yeah, trying to second guess
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, I think, I honestly think, and Mr. Adamo won't like me for saying this, I don't think it's a particularly happy camp just now at Hyundai.
Well, it can't be. You know, it can't be. You know, any team player at Hyundai that is happy with the way things are right now is delusional. You know, they are in a they're in a difficult position. I mean, you know, Sordo, you know, what was it? Third co-driver of the season.
What is that about? Tell me about that. What is happening there?
Absolutely no idea. I think it's clearly just he's struggling to find somebody that works with him, isn't he, George? You know, I don't know, but,
Is he trying to find a pace and you know, the usual story always in the past has been, you know, change your co-driver and it rejigs everything and it's fair, but that's third co-driver.
Danny doesn't need to do that.
Not the case.
No. Yeah. No, not, you know, Danny's in a very different position, isn't he? You know, he's in a place now that he knows what he has to do, but it's almost symptomatic of a team that's struggling. And, you know, it's very easy to sort of blindly say, oh, yeah, now we're putting the resource to next year, but we know that potentially that car is a little bit late as well. So they are a team up against it.
So then a quick précis on that whole thing is we've quite clearly got a number of engineering issues on that car, its reliability, on various aspects, not just one or two, the stalling on the hairpins that's been going on for a year. Yeah, you've got to focus that towards and say, right, they've got some engineering issues for whatever reason. You know, we're not pointing a finger at any individual, of course, far from it. That could be caused by a number of things: a policy, an engineering shout. It could be that the parent company has decided they would interfere with the way the team's run, and they've started to influence certain things. You get people pissed off. They still try and do their best, but they're limited what they can do. I've been in the position where I've do the right thing, I've had to go against people's wishes. You know, I mean, you know, and paid a penalty for it as well, you know, become unpopular for it. But he was still got a championship win, thank you very much. Doesn't matter.
But, Hyundai is not in that position. You know, there's no championship coming to them this year. They need to now focus on next year. But it's enormously demotivating, and isn't it? Especially when you're going to somewhere like Finland.
The pressure must build, David, as well, within the team, because, you know, they have written this year off. They're not going to win the manufacturers, and they're certainly not going to win the drivers. And we know how important it is for Hyundai to be up there and winning championships. And the pressure just mounts and mounts and mounts on this 2022 car. And as you rightly say, you know, and I think Adamo said to us in an interview in Greece, you know, they are a bit behind the other two teams in terms of their testing and development, particularly behind M-Sport. M-Sport have got thousands of Ks on their car already. You know, you just have to keep your fingers crossed that they have got a clear vision, that they have got a clear route to 2022, and that they will come into 2022 with a competitive car. Because you just can't imagine how demotivating it will be for you know, the likes of Tanak and Neuville and whoever this third driver. And that's the other big question. You know, we've still got no idea who's going to drive that third car next year. That seems to be a bit unsettling as well. But
I think it's probably fair to say we have a rough idea.
Aye, we've got a rough idea.
Probably might be in that.
We don't know how it's going to.
Is it not.
Full time drive? Is it a part time drive? Who will be sharing it?
But the one thing that would give you some degree of confidence in there is Christian Laurier.
Aye, totally.
You know, a man who knows exactly what it takes to turn a rally car around and to deliver something great. So it's by no means is it done yet.
I can see Laurier taking more of a say in things, David. Not that he probably already doesn't have an enormous say in things, I'm sure he does. But I can genuinely see Laurier having an awful lot more of a say in the way that the whole project is pushed forward.
But also, you know, I mean, we've seen Adamo has been a strong leader with various decisions, strategic decisions in the past. But now, you know, we need to see him as a really strong leader to turn this ship around, or at least send it in a slightly different direction. And he's doing it without his sort of second lieutenant, would it be, in terms of Alain Panas, who was somebody who was always alongside, you know, running the rule over the regulations and looking, sense-checking everything. He's gone. And you know, perhaps Adamo is quite exposed at the very top of the tree now. Not exposed, but just alone. He's a man with an awful lot on his plate, because, like, for me, he's not somebody who can... He needs to be involved in everything in a good way. You know, we saw him in the way that he kind of puts his arm around the whole team. He'll be doing that, you know, and then they've got the Rally 2 car, which has made a decent start. But it hasn't come out. It hasn't come out and blown everywhere. Well, you know, Solberg was leading in Acropolis, wasn't he? And did he lead in Ypa? You know, the car has talked to people who tested it. The car's got speed. I guess we'll see more next week in Finland, but it's all building. You know, the commercial aspect for Andrea, he needs to sell those Rally 2 cars. So he needs those Rally 2 cars performing. And it just it adds pressure into that whole Hyundai picture. Yeah. While, you know, at the same time, you look across the water and there's Toyota just sailing gracefully towards two championships.
Yeah, and Toyota, who at the end of the year will lose the services of possibly the greatest driver we've ever seen, and they don't care. because they have the next one. They have, because let's talk, and we haven't talked about Robin Perez.
I was just about to push us that way. We're half an hour into this podcast, and we haven't spoken about our fabulous Finn, who was the standout winner in Greece. Oh, I mean, from day one, he owned it.
It was exceptional. Mm-hmm. It was one of the best performances, particularly that first loop of stages on Saturday morning. Possibly the four best stages I have seen in a very, very, very long time, where he absolutely blew Tanak and Ogier out of the water. What we have to remember is that he's never been to Greece before. You know, he absolutely had never seen those stages. He prepared well for the rally, and he told us that. But he was so comfortable on those stages. He was so in control. He had the most minor. It was almost like exaggerated oversteer. It wasn't a mistake, you would say, on the bauxite stage. And that was the only wheel that he put wrong all weekend. And he was frightening in his pace. And you think, he's gone there for the first time. He's only going to get to know these rallies better. He's only going to get quicker. How much quicker is he going to get? How much better is he going to get? I can see an era of domination. Yes, we've got the likes of Solberg coming through. We've got Tanak wanting to regain his crown. Neville wanting to take his first crown. But I can see an era of absolute domination, because Kalle Rovanperä is, without any question, the greatest talent we have seen in decades in rallying. And he can only get better. It was exceptional, guys. And for everyone else, if Hyundai's woes themselves aren't demoralizing enough for Tanak and Neuville, you know, add to that the performance of Rovanperä and Toyota, and it's a double whammy for those drivers. They are getting battered in terms of their championship aspirations. Because
let's get a bit realistic.
No, George, I am telling you, George, that was a fabulous performance. Don't take anything away from it, because I'm going to batter you if
Colin,
you do.
I'm not going to take anything away from it. It just underlines the point. When the right driver, and he is a fabulous driver, make no mistake, he's absolutely the mark. You know, he's quite clearly got the right stuff. The Tanakisms, the Tommy Mäkinens, the Sebastian Loeb, Sebastian Ogier, he's got all that. He's got that in the mix. But every driver has great events, and they have average events where they're maybe only just winning, and it's all a bit of a struggle. Everything came together for him on that event perfectly. First time there, almost that might have been an advantage. No preconceptions of what he was going to find. And what he found was a relatively benign Acropolis rally in terms of what, you know, it wasn't going to batter the cars to death. It was a really, really intelligent route, well thought out, well figured out up there in the mountains. Not too much of the stuff that you like, but we all like as well, but it wasn't, and he drove perfectly, and he just got himself into the groove. We've seen Ott Tanak do it, we've seen Sebastian Ogier do it, we've seen Sebastian Loeb do it, we've seen Tommy Mäkinen do it, going back into the distant past. Colin McRae, you know, to go, you know, just as far back again. So honestly, don't make it sound like, you know, this young lad's going to come along and dominate everything and no one's got a chance to win.
George, I think
he will. Far from it.
I think he will, George.
Well, he might do a Sebastian Loeb. How tragic would that be for our sport?
Oh, it'd be terrible. It would be terrible.
Absolutely awful.
George, it'll be good. It'll be good for 6 months, a year, and then it'll be terrible. But you're right. Yeah. But that's not his fault.
You know? I don't think it works like that, because there's too much of a dynamic in the sport. You know, there's too many factors in it. He's got everything absolutely right just now, and he's very, very young, and he's quite clearly going to be our youngest ever world champion if everything comes together. But it's rallying, and we all know the dynamics.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
You know, he could easily have put a foot wrong. You know, that bit where he went a wee bit sideways on bauxite way.
He was in the ditch.
He could have knocked a wheel off. He was in the ditch. You know, and that's it. Oh, yeah, well, he was going really fast. But then it's Acropolis Rally. Who drives that quickly? You know, it's foolish. You know, you're going to get caught out. Those would have been the comments we'd have been making in our smart-ass way right now. And they're not realistic.
But I think so the big thing for Kalle here, sorry to jump in, George, but he absolutely knew that he had one opportunity to make time on everybody, and that was the first loop of stages, where nobody had any knowledge. And you said, Cole, that it was, I think, on the first loop, the first leg. Yeah. It was the second day,
second
wasn't it?
Day,
it was Saturday
morning.
Up in the mountains. Yeah. And those four stages, he took like 22 seconds out
40,
of everybody. It was
40, I think it was. And 40, nearly 40 seconds in four stages. It was astonishing.
whatever. Yeah. You know, as each stage rolled by, you just thought, crikey, something is coming here. He's either going to put it off in some sort of special way or the car's going to break. And it just kept coming. And then from there, he was able to just manage the event, which is almost as impressive as the pace that he showed.
I think that was even more impressive, David, wasn't
it? But then
he managed it with a great deal of aplomb.
But the response then on Sunday morning, you know, when certainly I thought that Tanak was going to absolutely, you know, take chunks of time back on him. But there was an interesting insight. You know, he goes out with two hards, two softs, and it's raining, it's slippery, it's muddy. You know, automatically you're thinking there's trouble ahead for this kid in here. I talked to Terencio from Pirelli, the genius tire engineer from Pirelli, and he said what's interesting about Robin Perra. I said, how did he cope with those two hards in those conditions? And he said, look, you know, that kid has the ability to put heat into those hard compound tires better than anyone else. He is quite aggressive in his driving style, and he generates heat, and he finds that he can get the tire up to temperature, the hard compound tire, and he gets the grip that others aren't getting from the hard compound. And that is why, you know, Saturday morning and then again on Sunday morning, you know, using hard compound tires, he was able to take such enormous chunks of time out of everyone. You know, he managed
those
tires.
Did he run them diagonally? Did he run those tires diagonally? So. Yeah.
But as much as he's getting heat into the hard, Colin, he's cooking the soft. What? So to be able to manage the balance of that is, again, it demonstrates the potential. The one person I take exception to now is, I have to say, Mr. Jari-Matti Latvala, who has shown himself up, I have to say. He told us before Acropolis that he didn't think Kelly could be world champion next year because there were still too many unknowns, too many events that he perhaps hadn't done, didn't have quite enough experience on. Sorry, Gary Matthew, I think you might have got that one wrong. I think, you know, from what we saw in Greece, which was a really different style of event, Kelly can go win anywhere, absolutely anywhere.
I wouldn't dis
Jari Matti's comments. I think they're very logical and very normal, and you know, we've all seen it.
Very
Jari
Matti. Sorry,
yeah. The Sebastian Ogier's, the Sebastian Loeb's, you know, they did a lot of rallies before they started winning. And it was a hard road to get to that top. You know, they didn't just instantly
Sebastian
arrive.
Loeb didn't do that many rallies, George, did he? You know, let's not forget, no, was it second event or third event where he was...
But he'd already done it in Formula 2 cars and things. He'd seen the events, without a doubt, exceptional. But you generally...
No, I'd say Kelly's
fairness
more
to,
experienced than Seb.
Seb keeps reminding us of that. Seb keeps reminding us of that. He's reminded me twice when I've referred to, you know, I asked him about the Saturday morning loop. I said, Seb, were you surprised, you know, that with Cali's lack of experience? And instantly, and he'd done it to me once before, he jumped in and said, no, you keep saying that he's inexperienced. He has a lot of experience of driving, an awful lot of experience. We're like, oh, sorry. But
it's all he's done. It's all he does.
All he's done is drive.
It's a fair comeback from Seb, really.
George, you know, running around in, you know, boy racer cars in Tesco's car park on a Saturday evening is not the same as getting into a
rally car. No. He was 8 years old in a rally car on a frozen lake.
Fair enough.
Sorry, mate.
Yeah, no,
he was
right,
learning,
right.
Like, you know, to drive a car on the limit.
You're wrong, Colin.
Bad analogy. I'm very sorry. I'm going back to my cup of tea, boys. Sorry.
Hi. You've got a cup of tea, luxury.
I do, John.
I had a cup of tea. I finished mine now.
Made myself one. Mind you, some Rice Krispies. I had some Rice Krispies as well.
It's very important to stay not only well hydrated, but nice and warm, especially if one were perhaps planning the start of the season in Monte Carlo. Now, I'm moving very clumsily onto that because I'm very curious about the response to this year's Monte Carlo route. And Adamo in particular and Malcolm Wilson have been making their thoughts known to you, David.
Yeah, it's totally very, very valid points from both of them. Monte, as we know, next year, starts back in Monaco, based out of Monaco. We're south from Gap. And the first night is, as expected, it's over Turini, two stages back into Monaco. But it's the Friday, the first full day of action, which is the real concern when they don't have a lunchtime service. So they go out into the stages and they have a tyre zone in Peugeot-Tenier, and then back to Monaco for an evening service. It's the same on Saturday. And there's real concern from the teams that they've got these brand new cars, hybrid cars, never competed before. And, you know, there's the potential, the very real potential, that they could all be super rallying by the end of the day. Agreed. You know, there's so
an R5 win for Monte Carlo, not off the card.
What did we see in Mexico, David? What did we see in Mexico when the first time the 2016, 2017 cars went to altitude into heat? Nearly every single one of them had problems. I totally agree with the Damo and your assessment.
But I think, you know, the problem is we're dealing with the Automobile Club de Monaco and de Monte Carlo, sorry. And, you know, sometimes we've seen in the past that they're not to be told. No. You know, when the WRC promoter of the time tried to tell the ACM that they wanted to fit them into this box of exactly what a WRC round should look like, essentially the ACM gave them the two-fingered salute and went off the IRC for 3 years, didn't they? So it'll be an interesting one, you know, because this Monte, you'd look at the itinerary and say, wow, that's cool.
Really?
That's a really good...
I'm not.
Oh, come on, Colin. There's a lot of short-term memory here, guys.
There's a lot of short-term memory.
No. I love it. You know, for me, rallying should be about endurance. And there's an endurance aspect in getting your car through those stages without the necessity to come back to service and rebuild it.
I agree. I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm arguing about. And, you know, what we saw in Greece was the nearest we've had to endurance in a very long time. Long, long days.
I do have a short-term memory, though, Colin.
But here's the thing.
Safari call?
No, I'm not thinking that. I'm thinking, you know, in terms of organising the Monte Carlo, and I don't care whether they put a service in on the first day. You know, what I think is more of an issue is this basing it in Monte Carlo. You know, it was moved out of Monte Carlo for a couple of very good reasons. You know, one, the stages got clogged. Listen, we have got a madly passionate, particularly Italian rally audience who are desperate to get back out on the world rally stages. There will be tens, if not hundreds of thousands of them. And what's happened in the past, you run these stages, which are beautiful, iconic stages with two accesses, three accesses. What happens? They get clogged. The other issue that we moved up to gap for was lack of snow and weather. It's a tarmac rally.
Yeah,
it's a dry tarmac rally. And okay, if we're really, really lucky, we may get a little bit of weather. But, you know, these were the reasons that, you know, in the early noughties, it's the reason we moved away from there. That the congestion was unmanageable and the weather was just benign and boring. You know, so we moved and we got better rallies. Why have they moved it back? I don't care about this midday service. I want to know why they moved it back.
Then go and talk to Malcolm Wilson. Go and talk to some of the team principals and team managers about the need to bring rallying to the people, which is vital.
Yeah, but David, that's ridiculous to say that, you know, bring
steady.
No. I agree, bringing rallying to the people, but you know, it is counterproductive to say, you know, let's expect these people to come, you know, many hundreds of kilometers to a rally to watch a rally, and in fact to see nothing because we're going to cancel stages. You know, that's not bringing rallying to the people. That's pissing the people off.
But Have you looked at the route and the access point? Because, I mean, they've obviously, the ACM has given this some thought. They've worked with the gendarmes and all of that. And I don't know. You know, I haven't dug out the, whatever it would have been, the last one when we were stuck up near Isola 2000 for a whole day. But they will have, you know, they understand these.
Yeah, that's true.
They organise rallies.
So maybe I'm being a little bit.
And, you know, Malcolm's point and the other team principal's point is that you've got Monaco. You've got this unbelievably iconic, you know, around the world, everybody knows motorsport in Monaco.
Use it.
And we pop in there on a Sunday morning.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
And that's it. You know, last year was shocking, wasn't it? You know, we started out a gap and we saw nothing of Monaco. Yeah. In fact, we didn't see anything of Monaco because we were in BGM Sport in Brackley. but even people on the event saw nothing of Monaco. And that, ideally, you'd have a mix of the two, wouldn't you? Like we used to do. We used to go up to Saint-André-les-Alpes or somewhere for the night and then come back, go up the Gap and Tallard for the night and then come back to Monaco. It's difficult, but maybe we need to see more remote services again.
Yeah, maybe. I agree. I think maybe I was a little harsh on the organisers there. You know, that there are definite benefits, but you have to utilise those benefits. You know, if you're not making the most of them. Puts the whole thing.
Fundamentally, you know, it's something that does need to be addressed. And I, you know, as Adamo said in quotes, you know, you will never, ever, 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 ever hear that man dissing the Monte Carlo rally. It was what he was born and brought up on. And he was pretty vociferous about their approach to that day one itinerary, day two itinerary. So I would imagine there's some fairly strong conversations going on between them.
We're looking, it's not going to happen, but we do have kind of weird perfect storms. And in this current world we're living in, anything is possible. As a volcano erupts in the Canary Islands, everything is just peculiar at the moment. There is a possibility we've got newly homologalized. Homologated. There we go. Let's go with
Move
it.
Move on.
Technology coming in. So it's the first event of that. It is Monte Carlo, so the weather conditions will change from hour to hour, minute to minute, overnight. I remember the days of you standing, trying to flag cars down in snow and wind and rain in the night, Colin. We're talking about those kind of conditions, and potentially, if we will have shakedown, the cars will be as prepared as possible for this event. But there's a possibility you could get to the end of Thursday night and not have cars starting if they haven't got it, let alone having that lunchtime service break. I mean, it could be over before it starts. That's I'm guessing
the same argument was made when we went to service zones and service areas in the mid 90s, Lisa.
Not being able to work on the cars after every stage.
I guess one of the big fears and the big commentary we're getting is because these are brand new cars, they're liable to need a bit of tweaking. They'll want the engineers on them. They're all software driven. All these hybrid systems are all computerized. Will they need resets? Will the drivers be able to do that on the road? Will they have time to do it on the road if it's required to get it back to square one? Whatever, I don't know.
That's the frustrating thing.
That's where some of the concern is.
That is the frustrating thing, George, that you could actually see a car that looks absolutely perfect, that's going nowhere, that does need, as you say, a technician to just come in and effectively switch it off and switch it on again.
I can. For once, from a technical aspect, I can step in here and tell you that these cars, it's a big moment, drum roll, please. These cars will run without the hybrid. If hybrid breaks, it won't stop the car. They will continue to work.
David, answer this. But obviously, answer this. This might be a question far for you, but answer this.
So, yeah, it will, almost so.
But can a problem with the hybrid affect other elements of the car? So you say they can run without the hybrid, but can if there's a problem with the hybrid box, the hybrid power, the hybrid,
such as what?
Well, say the hybrid traction, the hybrid drive. You know, can that then affect the rest of the drive? You know, you can't just switch the hybrid off because it's actually damaged some other component. Is that
no? Well, it drives through that shaft, doesn't it, into the prop shaft? So, you know, the teams will all have worked on that. They'll all understand. That's a component that can fail. But I understand that it can be disconnected and you can still drive the car. I don't know. You know, you have.
I also see a potential issue here. Does hybrid make?
I was riding the crest of a wave, technological
wave. Both you and George can perhaps answer this for me then. Will the hybrid technology always make the car faster? And if it doesn't, will we see teams just not using it?
Technically, it could make them slower because it brings a whole lot more weight to the car.
Yeah. The bottom line is, Lisa, is that it's a power system, so it's adding power to the car. So it will always make the car more powerful and it should be faster, except maybe on a Monte Carlo where it's 80% ice and 20% tarmac through one stage, and you're going through on slicks. Power's not going to make much difference there.
Yeah.
Although on the 20%, globally, it will.
I don't think globally we'll see the cars going. I don't think it will be stage records won't be beaten next year, because you know you do get that extra power, an extra 130 horsepower, but you get it for a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
And you know that it's a lot of weight they're carrying. And the cars are. You know, the cars are very different. Let's not forget there's no center diff, there's a 5-speed box, no paddle shift, there's no this, no that. You know, they are essentially
They're losing the paddle shift as well, of course. I'd forgotten that.
So I mean, they are they're it's R5 technology in terms of transmission, brake, suspension. You know, there's not as much suspension travel, so these cars are going to be slower, but they will be unbelievably spectacular. And this is there's a little S. We have seen it, Colin. Really, you get these people.
Redneck tractors.
Sounds
redneck
great.
Some of these people, these people who are moaning and bitching about the fact that, the spectacle's gone. Nonsense.
It'll be every bit the same. Yeah.
And I don't get people talking about the sound of it, you know, in terms of, I think they're thinking that the hybrid is going to take over from the engine rather than boost the engine, and we'll get whole lots of time where all we're getting is engine kind of, not engine, electric battery noise. It's nonsense. You know, these cars sound magnificent. They sound as good as ever, if not better, some of them.
Until they're completely silent. I do wonder, Cole, what will happen the first time you and I see one going down the road without the engine running on pure electric power. I wonder if you'll be electrified yourself and say, oh, no, he's got a problem. He's rolling. He's coasting. Do you think we'll get that?
Now that you pre-warned me that that's not the case.
There's one thing I need to jump in with before we go, because I know, Colin, you've got to run away in a minute. We've got Finland coming up. We've had Finland testing.
Yep. Hugely exciting. I am a deep, deep lover of two things, autumn and Finland. In the autumn is just, it's jumper wearing heaven. So take me there immediately.
I sought out some advice on...
If you say anything about heatwave,
I sought out some advice for you in terms of wardrobe. Good. In terms of wardrobe. And they said, just think Wales Rally GB in late November, early December. And that's what to take with you.
That'll do
so
for
you
me.
You can take your nice kind of Arctic snood and all that stuff that makes you very, very happy. Take it all with you.
We know what Finland's like in the wet. You know, the it's a reverse of the normal. The road doesn't clean. The road actually diminishes in the wet. It gets slower, not faster. That's quite a unique aspect of it.
And that's the same as Wales again, isn't it? Yeah. It polishes a little bit.
You can't ask me technical questions occasionally.
I can't.
No, Colin, they're all
that's slightly technical.
Colin.
Let's
go, nobody's buying into it.
Fashion, but no, sartorial
actually,
advice.
Colin, the best thing about the pictures that we've seen of pre-event testing in Finland is just the leaves. You know, it looks beautiful. Yes. It looks
lovely
stunning.
They're all evergreens. They don't shed.
No. Yes, David. No, you need to look closer.
There's the odd deciduous tree on in the towns and villages.
But no lupins this year.
Georgie, do you remember?
Lupins are long gone.
Lupins have gone. George, remember when I just bought my new camera and we went up to take some? I think it was the GB recce, and we had that glorious afternoon, and we had a bailey up. You took your wee stove.
We were
in the middle of that forest, and the leaves were turning, and it was a glorious afternoon.
It was just an absolute riot
of golds and russets and maroons. And
can't beat
it. It was beautiful, wasn't it?
Pretty impressive.
Russets.
Cannot beat it.
I like that.
Yeah, it was just, and on top of that, Georgie Donaldson, in the middle of this Welsh forest, overlooking these incredible hills that were covered in these beautiful colours, made possibly one of the best bacon sandwiches I have ever tasted. Oh, it was a joy and a treat.
There'll be tomatoes in there as well.
It's the promise of rally that makes it taste sweet.
Can I have a russet coloured jumper?
I might bring that.
Right now in Jyväskylä, it's 3 degrees centigrade.
Get lost.
Jesus, are you serious?
That's 10 o'clock. It's 3 degrees centigrade in Jyväskylä right now.
That could be snow.
Tonight, it's going to go down to freezing. Oof. It's going to go down to zero. Tomorrow,
hello,
8 degrees. Jyväskylä. Tomorrow, 8 degrees. Tuesday night, 1 degree. Thursday night, 3 degrees. Friday night, 5 degrees.
Yeah, then
Saturday,
curiously, George,
degrees.
We get there and it'll rocket back up to 22 degrees.
Also, the other thing you've got to take into account, you're not going to have your midnight sun.
We might sleep quite well. That's a great thing.
In the darkness. That's a big point, actually, that Lappy made on some stages on Friday, because obviously he's running quite a long way further down the field. He said, Ogier will get stages in the daylight, or maybe, you know, in dusk or whatever, which will be pitch black for him.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? And we know that makes a big, big difference. Be interesting.
Pitch
guys, I'm very sorry, guys. I am absolutely...
We are done. So
I'm loving our early morning chat.
We will be back with a look ahead to Finland. This is Spin the Rally Pod. Thank you for listening to us. If you do like what you're listening to and you want more of it...
What's not to
subscribe.
Like?
Subscribe. What is not to like? Yeah, subscribe. Click subscribe.
Where else do you hear the word russet in a podcast?
And russet jumpers. if you want to get in touch, hashtag at Dirtfish Rally. And let us know your thoughts. Kind ones would be better. Thank you very much, George
Keep
Donaldson.
Your negativity to yourself.
Colin Clark and David Evans. And can't wait now. I've got very excited all of a sudden about Finland.
Woo. Yes. Well, not too long till we have our little pre-Finland discussion. We'll see you all then. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Lovely.
Bye-bye. Bye.